Hi, this is Doug Mayhew, and in this screencast, we're going to take a look at Redis on Windows. Redis is an open source key value store, or as it says here on the redis.io page, which is the community homepage for Redis, it's also a data structure server. The reason that description is used here is because Redis doesn't just allow for key value pairs. It allows you to store key value strings, also hashes, lists, sets, and sorted sets. And I'm going to show you an example of each of those five different data structures in a minute. But the basic concept is that with Redis, you can model a lot of different interesting use cases above and beyond just what you can do with a key value store. But Redis still remains very, very fast and very simple and easy to work with. And in fact, I hope I'll be able to show you here in the screencast, Redis is just plain fun to work with. It's kind of an interesting technology to think about how you can apply in your own applications. Now, to learn more about Redis, redis.io, as I mentioned, is this homepage of the community site, and there's also a couple of great Twitter feeds that you can follow, the Redis feed Twitter feed, and also Antirez, A-N-T-I-R-E-Z, that's Salvatore Sanfilippo, the inventor and maintainer of Redis, and those are great places to learn more. Now, Redis on Windows, in order to get Redis working on Windows, required a few changes to the Redis core because Redis uses Linux's copy-on-write feature. Basic concept is that Linux has a feature that makes it easy to take a copy of a structure in memory and then go write that to disk while you're still updating the structure in memory and deal with the changes there. In order to get it working properly on Windows and fast on Windows, it was necessary to re-engineer that over in the Windows world. So MS OpenTech, we did that work, and we created this fork of Redis for Windows. And Salvatore Sanfilippo had suggested that we do this as a fork, and so we're following the guidance of the leader of the community there and have done this as a fork. And then we've done a bunch of work to make sure that it's stable and reliable and ready for prime time. And that's the reason we're starting to tell people about it now, is we feel it's ready to go and the performance is good. And there's a bunch of blog posts here where you can go learn more about that. So if you go to msopentech.com, and then go to the project section, and under there go to the Redis page. That's where you can find links to a bunch of these things. So now going forward here, I'm going to show you a little bit about how to install Redis and how to use it on Windows. There are two ways you can install Redis on Windows. One is to go to the GitHub repo for Redis on Windows and download the source code, and there are instructions here about how to build and compile that, and that way you end up with all the Redis executables in a folder and you're ready to go. Another cool option is Redis recently was added to the NuGet gallery, so you can install with NuGet if you're using Visual Studio. I'm going to show you that option a little later. Right now I have a copy of Redis installed from the GitHub repo that I'm going to use to show you a few things. On the GitHub repo, one thing I wanted to point out here, over 1,000 commits, 86 contributors, and currently 742 people watching this repo. So there's a bunch of people already using Redis on Windows, and now that we've done some stress testing and other things and feel it's ready for production use, we expect to see those numbers go up. So let's take a look at Redis on Windows here. I have it installed, and I followed the instructions there, and let's see here, if I go to my Redis folder, here you can see the Redis executables, and there's just two that I want to talk about here, Redis Server and Redis Client. So Redis Server, that is the Redis server instance that needs to keep running. If you're running this in the cloud, that's what's running on your server, and then you have an endpoint to get at it through a specified port. The default port is 6379. In this case, we're just running it locally, so this is at localhost or 127.0.0.1 and at that port. And then if I fire up the Redis client here, now this will talk to that server. The client also uses all the defaults, so it should just be talking to that out there at port 6379. And the quick way to make sure that that's working, just hit ping. I got an uppercase pong back. So now I am talking to my Redis instance. So now we're ready to try a few things with Redis just to get a feel for how Redis works. Okay, so we have a Redis server running. We have a client window connected to it. and we're ready to try a few things. We're going to go through some typical commands that you use for each of the five data structures that Redis supports. I certainly won't go through all of the commands here. This is just a quick overview. However, if you want to learn about any or all of the Redis commands, redis.io/commands is the official documentation. And it's well organized, simple, straightforward. So you can just go look up a command here, find out what it does, find out related commands, and so on. So let's get right into it. The first thing we're going to start with, the first of the five data structures, is key value pairs. So I can set a key, I'll give it a name, hometown, let's say. That's my hometown, Bozeman. And if I say get hometown, there's the value. Now, most people don't know where Bozeman is, so I can append to that key, like so. And so now if I get it, it says Bozeman, Montana. You can also do some things with setting counters. So if I set, let's say the population of Bozeman way back when was about 20,000, if I now say increment Bozeman, that goes up 20,001, 20,002, and so on. I can say decrement by Bozeman 4, and now I took 4 away from it and got back to 20,000. Basic commands you can do there to keep track of counters and key value pairs. If I type keys asterisk, I'm showing all of the keys that I've defined here. I've got 3 keys defined. If I go delete Bozeman, I can get rid of one of those keys, or I can just say flush all. That gets rid of all the keys in the current database. Another command, flush DB, gets rid of all the keys in all of the databases. By default, Redis has 16 different databases. You can do select one, select a different one. Select 0, 0 is the default database, so we'll stay there for the rest of our little example here. One thing you can do with Redis is you can set bits within a string and then quickly count those bits. And this has a bunch of interesting applications for cases where you just want to track things like, say, the total number of visitors to a site, total number of views of a page, things like that. So if I set my counter, let's say, to an empty string, if I say bit count my counter, that's 0. None of the bits are set in that string. But there's a function called set bit, and I can say set bit my counter, set bit number 33 to 1, set bit number 100 to 1. You get the idea. And now if I go back to that bit count command, it says 2 because 2 of those bits are set. In this case, if I get my counter, you'll notice it gets returned in hex notation. So those are some of the things you can do with key value pairs. Next, let's take a look at lists. Lists are the second of the five data structures that Redis supports. So for lists, if I say L push onto a list, and I'll give it a name of cities colon visited, you can use colons in the names of keys in Redis, and that's a pretty common thing to do, this sort of approach I'm showing here. So here's a few cities that I have visited. Those are now in my cities visited list. If I do L range to look at a range of a list, L range of cities visited, 0 minus 1, there's the list. And I can push more items onto the list. So if I say L push cities visited, and let's add Copenhagen to the list. So those are the basics of how you get things into a list. Then I can pop things off of the list. I can inspect values, and I can also pop them off like a stack. So as I process each one, I pop it off the list. And that's really simple, just lpop. So lpop cities visited, that'll return the most recent one, Copenhagen, and then so on. I can pop them all off the list. I can also sort my list. So if I go sort cities visited in alpha order, there's my sorted list. Now in this case, what I've just done is asked Redis to sort the list and return to me a sorted copy of the list. Another thing that you might want to do, however, is not move that sorted list across the wire, but rather store it in a new list on Redis. So now, see, the list didn't come down the wire. If there were millions of items in this list, that all happened on the server and it's stored in a new data structure. And then if I say lrange new list, 0 minus 1, there's my sorted list in LMP order that's on the server. So that's a basic functionality in lists. Another thing you can do, I'm going to create a second list here called my wish list, cities wish list. And let's throw on here a few cities I'd like to visit, but I haven't seen yet. All sound like fun places. Okay, so that's a wish list that I have, and then I also have the visited list. Now, let's envision a scenario where each time I visit a city, I want to pop it off the wish list and put it onto the visited list. Redis has a command that combines all those operations into a single atomic operation, rpopLpush. Pops off the right end of one list, in this case city's wish list, and then takes that value that's found and pushes it onto this other list. So if I do this now, I have just visited Istanbul, and Istanbul is now off the wish list and on the city's visited list. So I can just go through this and keep doing this until I'm done, and now I've moved everything from my wish list to the city's visited list. So if I go lrange cities visited 0 minus 1, they're all over there now, and the other list is empty. Now, let's suppose that this were a production application, and I would like to just wait for the next value to be added to wish list, and as soon as I see something show up there, I want to move it over to visited and take whatever actions necessary to actually go visit it. That's the fun part. So to do that, there is a special version of the rpopLpush command that is the blocking rpopLpush command, and you put a B up front, and then there's one other thing at the end of it. You need to put a timeout parameter. So what we're saying here is wait for up to 100 seconds for something to appear on wish list, and then pop it off and push it on to visited. And if there's something in wish list right now, this command will return immediately and just take action on it. Otherwise, it's going to block and wait. So now it's just blocking and waiting there. So to kind of show how this works, I can go here, fire up another Redis client. And then in this Redis client, I can say lpush. Keep in mind, I'm working with the same server here, so I'm in the same database. Lpush city's wish list. And so let's say I put on my city's wish list, I don't know, where do I want to go these days? Let's go to Santiago. So if I push that on, boom, you can see down in the other window that it returned immediately. It had been waiting for 28 seconds, and then it pushed that onto the city's visited list. So there you see Santiago on the list. Those are some of the basic things that you can do with lists. For our next Redis data structure, let's look at hashes. You can think of a hash as a set of key value pairs all associated with a particular identifier. So for example, hset Seattle. Let's say that Seattle has a state, and that state is Washington. So here now we've associated with the identifier Seattle this pair state equals Washington. Then I can get that value back, of course. I can go hget, what is Seattle's state, and there it is. We can also use hmset for multi-set, so we can say Seattle has a county, it's in King County, has a population of around 560,000. So now if I say hget all of Seattle, what's everything we know about Seattle? There it is. So those are the basics of a hash. There's a lot of cool things you can do with hash, but right now we're just going through the basics of each of the commands. The fourth of the five data structures is sets. Let's look at a few things we can do with sets. I can say set add to add some members to a set, and I'm going to say this is the set of cities in California. Notice there's that embedded colon approach in naming keys. So what are some of the cities in California? Oakland, Fresno, Los Angeles. I have to put in quotes because it has a space in it, and let's put San Francisco in too. Those are some cities in California, and then I can say things like show me the members of cities California. Now let's create cities in Florida, and for Florida we have Miami, Orlando, Tampa, and Florida happens to have an Oakland also. So now if I go S members cities Florida, there's the members of that set, and then I can do things like S intersection. What is the intersection of cities California and cities Florida? So these are the basic sorts of operations you do with sets. Earlier we saw how we sorted a list and then we had an option to store it. In this case, we're returning back to the client all of the intersection of cities in California and cities in Florida. If we wanted to store that in a separate set in Redis, we'd say S inter store. And then we go cities both, let's say, to create a new set that is the intersection of cities in California and cities in Florida. And then if I do S members of cities both, there's our intersection, in this case just Oakland. another interesting bit of functionality for sets is I can say, give me a random member of the cities of California. So as I execute this, notice the first two were both San Francisco. Anyways, it's just returning a random member of that. If you want to process things out of a set in a random order, you can do spop, and the default behavior of spop is to just pop a random member off the set. So these are not coming off in any particular order, and then at some point they're just done there. Those are the basics of working with sets. The fifth and final Redis data structure is sorted sets. We're going to take a look at those now. They're slightly different from sets, which we just saw, in that in a sorted set, each item within the set has a score associated with it. So there are two pieces of information. So in the examples we just saw, we had some sets of cities. Imagine if we had a set of cities including the population of each city. That'd be a good example of a sorted set. So I'm going to set up a sorted set like that that we can play with a bit here just to see how it works. And for this one, let's go get a lot more data just so we can see how it works in a more realistic scenario. Here I have a CSV file that is from the 2000 census, and it's 20,000 roughly U.S. cities and towns and their populations. And then here we have a little program. Now later in the screencast we're going to look at how to write code around Redis, including using Visual Studio and some other things. So I'm not going to get into how this program is working right now, but you can just kind of see, I mean, it's real simple. It opens a CSV file and then iterates through all the rows in it, and for each row it takes that data we just saw and adds the city and its population to a Redis sorted set. Z add, you see here, all the Z commands are the sorted set commands. So if I go fire up that program, desktop here, I'm just going to double click on this because I have this associated, the .py extension associated with Python. Just took a second to run. And now I have here, I can go in and look, I have a sorted set that if I look at its size, its cardinality with Z card, it has 19,256 entries in it. And if I say Z range of cities 0 minus 1, there they all are, 20,000 different cities. And if I do the same here with scores, there they are with the population. And these are in sorted order, so at the very end is New York, the biggest city, and it started with the smallest ones. Now, before I go further, one thing I'd like to point out, over on the right we have the server running, and notice something here that I'd alluded to earlier about copy on write and how we can copy memory structures in the background when we continue working. Redis, by default, is set up so that if there's a certain number of change in a certain length of time, then it will write everything out to disk. So we have here, notice it says 10,000 changes in 60 seconds saving. That's because in the last 60 seconds, we imported a bunch of data, that this whole 19,000 cities from my sample data, and so it automatically saved. And here you see copy and write, background save, reset, and so on. So that's just a glimpse at some of the work that was done to get Redis performing well on Windows. So let's go back to our data. We've got this sorted set that has 19,000 some cities in it, and let's look at some of the things we can do with that. One of the things we can do is we can say Z range, if we go 0, 4, I'm sorry, I have to remember to say what we want. We want cities 0 through 4 with scores. What we're looking at there is the four smallest cities in the 2000 census, population 1, 1, 2, 2, and 3, or the five smallest, 0 through 4. Now, if we want to see the largest cities, we can do the same thing, but instead we count with negative numbers from the top end of the list. So if we go from number minus 5 to number minus 1, there's the top five cities in order with New York at the end. More typically, we might want to see a list that starts with number 1 is the biggest city and so on. So there's Z reverse range is another variation here. And I can go cities 0 through 4 with scores. And so that's the leaderboard scenario. These are the top cities in order. And in fact, a common scenario for using Redis is leaderboards for games and other things. I can also change the scores of various cities. So, for example, if we look at this list here, Los Angeles has 3,600,000, Chicago 2,800,000. If we want to make Los Angeles smaller than Chicago, we'd have to have about, what, 1 million people leave Los Angeles. So if we go Z increment by cities, and we go -1,000,000, and then Los Angeles, California, have to exactly match the name of that item in the set. And now we have just reduced the population of LA by 1 million. And now if we go look at the biggest cities, here Chicago's taken number 2, second place. So those are some of the sorts of things you can do to manipulate the scores. We can do things like Z score cities. Let's see, go Seattle, Washington, and here we're looking at the score of Seattle. So there's the population of Seattle, 563,374. Another thing we might want to do is instead of looking at the score, we want to see the rank. Where does Seattle rank? So we go Z rank cities, and then Seattle, Washington. And here we can see Seattle is number 19,234. Now, that's counting from the smallest to the largest. So it's the 19,234th smallest city. More typically, you'd want to see how close it is to the top of the list. So that's what Z reverse rank comes in. So Seattle is the 21st biggest city. Now, let's say we want to see some other cities around the size of Seattle. So we can go Z range by score. And we can go on that on cities 500,000 to 600,000. So there's some cities between 500 and 600,000 around the size of Seattle. And if I append with scores in the end, we can actually see the population of each of those cities. So those are some of the sorts of things you can do with sorted sets. One interesting thing to note is that in sorted sets, the way they're stored internally in Redis keeps them in alphabetical order within each score. So if there are a bunch of items that have the same score, they're stored in alphabetical order, which can be kind of handy for certain scenarios. So if I go Z range by score cities that have a population of from 100 to 100, turns out there's, what, 21 different cities that in the 2000 census had a population of exactly 100. And the interesting thing here is that these are appearing in alphabetical order. This behavior, see, this didn't cost us anything. We didn't wait for it to sort. Rather, this is inherent in how this memory structure works in Redis. This behavior is used for a bunch of things, most notably for autocomplete. So those are some examples of what you can do with sorted sets. One final thing I want to mention, it's typical for a leaderboard style application to just keep a certain subset. Like let's say we're trying to keep track of the top 10 biggest cities, and we don't want a great big data structure. We just want to always have the top 10 in memory, and if something else gets big enough, it moves into that list. So what we can do is we can Z remove range by rank. So what we're going to do here is remove part of the sorted set, and let's remove everything that isn't in the top 10. So that's starting at the left, 0, the smallest city, up through -11 down from the high end of the list. Once we've done that, we've deleted a whole bunch of the list. That's 19,246 items removed. And now if we go Z range cities 0, -1, we just have the top 10 listed there. So this is a typical sort of scenario, and then each time you add a new entry, you truncate it to that top 10, and the performance on this particular command is linear with the number of items you're removing, so if you're only removing one each time, it's really fast, and that's kind of a good thing to do for keeping track of a leaderboard or that sort of scenario. So that's sorted sets. Then the final thing I want to show you in terms of just Redis basics is publish subscribe. So Redis has some kind of simple but very fast and reliable pub/sub capability. And so I can go in here and I can say publish on a channel. I'll call my channel Doug and I'll put a test message out there. Well, nobody's listening to the channel Doug right now, but that's how I publish to it. To have somebody listening to it, it's really simple. I just go fire up another Redis client, and then this other Redis client, let's say subscribe to Doug. So once that's done, this one's just sitting and waiting to see something on that channel. go drag this over here where we can actually see it, and go back, and now, so each time I publish test, it shows up on that channel. So those are the basics of PubSub. You can subscribe to a set of channels matching a pattern and a few other things, but we're going to look at that in more detail in the programming example to come, where we'll show a PubSub example. So that's the basics of Redis. There are a bunch of topics we didn't cover here. The whole approach to persistence, expiration times. You can set relative or absolute times for a key to expire. So that's used in caching scenarios a lot. Lua scripting has been supported in Redis since the release of version 2.6. You can also do pipelining, where you batch together a bunch of commands that are set in one big batch without waiting for responses in between. Transactions, you can partition and replicate data. We haven't even talked about Redis's master subordinate architecture, where you can have many different servers replicating data between them for high availability. So there's a bunch of other topics here related to Redis, but my goal here is just to show you the basics, and now we're going to move on to how to do software development on Windows with Redis. Here we are back on the Redis.io page, and notice at the top here, clients. This is the page that summarizes information about various libraries you can use from various languages to write software that takes advantage of Redis. So as you can see, there's a bunch of different libraries here. Hi Redis, this is the popular official C client for C code. There's C Sharp, C++, many other languages here. And I'm going to show you a simple example here in Python. So we're going to use the Redis Py library from Andy McCurdy, and this is, as it says here, currently the way to go for Python. Now, there's a few different things we can do here. I could just fire up a text editor and start writing some Python code and go install Python, go to that GitHub repo and get Redis Py and install that. That's one way I could go. However, I want to show you an interesting option that, as Scott Hanselman recently blogged, this is one of Microsoft's best-kept secrets, Python Tools for Visual Studio. You can use Python Tools for Visual Studio in any one of the last several versions of Visual Studio, and with the Python Tools for Visual Studio, or PTVS, you get it to take advantage of all sorts of Visual Studio functionality, debugging, profiling, you have IntelliSense, and you can use NuGet. And then I mentioned earlier there are a couple different ways to install Redis. You can install Redis through NuGet right in Visual Studio. So that's a quick and simple way to install Redis, and then you can also bundle it up with your solution if you'd like and do some things like that. To learn more, go to this blog post, Scott Hanselman's, and it's got links to a bunch of great resources to learn more about using Python in Visual Studio. Also, IronPython, which ties into the .NET framework. I'm not going to talk about that today just because we're focused on Redis. However, there's a bunch of options here for using Python in Visual Studio. A great place to learn more about that, go to YouTube and search for Python Tools for Visual Studio, and the product group that put together PTVS has done some great videos there to help you get started. So let's go into Visual Studio here and let's get started. I'm going to create a new project, and I'm going to take advantage of Redis, and we're going to write this project in Python. When I click on New Project, because I've already installed Python Tools for Visual Studio, I have the option here to create a project in Python. So I just go Python Application, and in this case, I'm going to give it a name here. I'm going to call this Sine Wave, and I'll explain in a minute why I'm doing that. And so now, give it a second here, and we've got a new solution and a new project called Sine Wave, and then we have our Hello World Python program here. There's a few things to know. I have Python already installed on my machine, so if I go in here, Python environments, and add remove Python interpreters, Visual Studio knows that I have Python 64-bit version 2.7 out there on my machine. So I just click OK, and I have associated that Python environment with this particular project and solution. And so it found that I already have Redis Py, the Python Redis library, installed. So all of that is here and available for me to use in my project. So, for example, I can go import Redis, and lo and behold, in IntelliSense, it knows that there is a Redis package out there ready for me, already installed. So let's import Redis and a couple other things I'm going to use here, the math and time packages, and let's just get started. So The reason I named this sine wave is I would like to have something visual that we can see scrolling past as we're doing a little pub-sub scenario. So I'm going to create, say, 100,000 rows of X's, and these rows of X's are just going to print sine wave out on the screen. So there's my little program, and it just generates a row of X's that varies in length based on a sine curve. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. So now let's go publish those as messages that are various lengths of strings of X's there. So there's really just two things I need to add. We've already imported Redis, so we have the full functionality of the Redis Pi library available. I'm going to create an instance of the strict Redis object, and this is going to give us access to all of Redis's commands. Now, the reason it's named strict Redis is there was an older version of this library that had a Redis object, and they had Pythonified some of the commands, and then strict Redis follows very strictly the syntax of the Redis commands. Once you learn Redis commands like hget or other things I was showing earlier, you can use those in any environment from any language, so it kind of makes sense to stick with the core syntax there. So now what I'm going to do is, before we print this out to the screen, I'm just going to go down and call the publish method of our Redis object and publish to my channel, and let's publish that current row of X's. So there we have it, and all we've done is created a Redis client object and then published that. Now, we need to have the Redis server running. That's something we need to take care of ourselves, so we're going to go fire that up here. So there's my Redis server. So now that that's running, I can go over here and run this, and it looks the same. We don't have a listener listening to this. So now let's go create a listener object that kind of does what we did in the Redis client before. So I'm going to save this and go create a new project to do that. So we go new project here. Once again, this will be a Python application. And let's just call this one listener. So here's listener, here's our default hello world code. We'll get rid of that, and we're going to replace that with some code here that will listen to that channel. So this is just really very simple. All I need to do is import Redis, and then create that Redis object as we did in the other project. So here we have strict Redis. And then we're going to create another object here. We're going to create a pub-sub object. This is a case where the syntax here varies a little bit from how it works just in the Redis client. And the reason is we don't want to, in the Redis client, we just kind of blocked and waited when we typed subscribe. Well, here we want to make this a little easier to work with. So there is an object in this Redis Pi library called pub-sub. So I can go create a pub-sub instance. And once I've got PubSub there, then I can say for my PubSub, I can go subscribe. Notice the IntelliSense here. I can go subscribe to my channel. So there's my channel, as I called it in the other project. And then we say for item in PubSub listen, we're going to just listen to that. And each time we hear something, if the item's type is a message, then let's just print it out. So print items data, and there's also, we could print item, could put channel in there instead of data if we had multiple channels and wanted to see where they all come from. So with that, we have a listener application here. So now we have this listener application, and we also have the sine wave application that sends the messages. So I think you know where this is headed. We're going to fire up the listener and then fire up the sine wave and see how they're communicating with each other. Now to do this, I'm going to show you, just because we can do this a few different ways. I'm going to go in here to my Visual Studio projects, and I can just run this listener code, the Python script here. I can just run that by double clicking on it because I have the Python interpreter installed and associated with that extension. And then I can go back up here, and where was our, there's our sine wave application. And so I can go in here and just run this like that, and you can see now that they're talking to each other. And so we have sine wave generating here, and if you look close, you can kind of see they're very tightly in sync. Now, everything I have is running local here. However, I'm going to use this same little demo in a subsequent screencast to show you how this works on Windows Azure and get a feel for how closely these stay in sync. It's just a good visual way to assess the latency there. Now, another interesting thing we can do is we can go run more and more instances of this application. So I'm just going to, go to my Visual Studio projects, and just for fun, where are we? Go down into the sine wave folder, there it is. So if I say sinewave.py from command prompt, here I'm running another instance of it. So you see what's going on here. We have two of these running side by side on the left, or above and below each other, and you can see how they're kind of piled on top of each other on the right. And then, of course, if we kill one of them, just one is left. And likewise, we can fire up multiple listeners. We can fire up multiple copies of the broadcast application. So that's the basics of PubSub and the basics of developing for Redis with Python in Visual Studio. So you can see it's very simple and straightforward. And as I mentioned earlier, frankly, I think it's a lot of fun. So that's Redis on Windows. Go to the GitHub site, go to msopentech.com and look at the Redis project page there to see the latest. There's links on that Redis project page that can help you learn a little bit more about the history of Redis and Windows. These are links to various blog posts where we tell in detail what we've done to make it possible to use Redis on Windows, as I've just shown you. That's Redis on Windows. I look forward to telling you more about Redis on Windows Azure in the next screencast in this series.